This podcast is proudly supported by Drama Victoria. Consider becoming a Drama Victoria member today to take advantage of the many member benefits. We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we record. We record on the land of the Bunurong people, and we pay our respects to elders past and present. Hello, and welcome to The Aside, a podcast for drama teachers and students. I'm Nick Waxman, and today we are talking with Timothy Wynn, the director of Duck, Duck, Goose, presented at Theatreworks. Before we begin, we want to inform our listeners that this episode includes a brief discussion about the theme of this play, sexual assault. Please be advised that the content may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised. Timothy Wynn has directed over 20 productions since becoming artistic director of That Production Company in 2009, including Ruined and Les Liaisons Dangereuses, with training from the Lee Strasberg Theatre and notable achievements such as awards for his direction of Cosy. Duck Duck Goose, premiering in Australia by That Production Company, is a gripping play about Chris Quinn navigating moral dilemmas after a friend is accused of sexual assault. It's directed by Tim Wynn, and it's playing at Theatreworks in April 2024. Without further ado, I bring you Timothy Wynn. Welcome to the podcast, Timothy Wynn.
Hello.
Hello, Timothy. Thank you so very much for giving us your time.
It's okay. Happy to be here.
Super. So you're 3 days into rehearsals, which is awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about Duck Duck Goose and why you wanted to stage this challenging work?
Absolutely. Duck Duck Goose is a play written by an Irish playwright called Katrina Daly. And the playwright was inspired to write a play about sexual assault, and in particular, the play centers around accusation, trial by media, and public perception of all the key players in an instance of an accusation of sexual assault. The play was inspired by a real-life trial that happened in Belfast in 2018, where a group of members of a rugby team kind of got themselves into a situation where one of them had been accused of sexual assault. But the way in which his teammates either become complicit in the event and then the subsequent fallout of the event is really at what the core of this play is. The play is really about what happens when your mate is accused of doing something horrific. That's at the core of what this play is.
Right, and maybe the logical question is why this play in 2024?
I think why this play in 2024, and in particular, why do a play that is about an event on the other side of the world and how that speaks to contemporary Australia. What I was really interested in when I read the play is it seems that this very Australian notion of mateship and loyalty to your mates kind of really permeates the Australian culture. And that becomes tricky when your mates do things that conflict with our other contemporary morals and ideals. So how does something that kind of we think makes us uniquely Australian in our values of friendship and loyalty and mateship, when that's at odds with an instance of sexual assault and believing the accuser, those things seem to conflict for me. And I think it's something that we really need to discuss and figure out a way to navigate that. Because it really isn't always black and white, and we need to kind of do a little bit of soul searching and figure out how we feel about this and how this type of accusation is going to affect our relationships.
Yeah, well, a really important message at the moment. I coincidentally just saw 37 at MTC, and that plays into similar vibes, the idea of what do we do about culture and mateship. And when we stand up for each other, and when we stand up for the people who need to be stood up for. So anyway, I just saw that the other day. I'm not sure if you've seen that, but it's
I'm actually going to see it next week.
Oh, great! Yeah, it resonated strongly with me as well. Really powerful and important messages for 2024. Absolutely. So theatre has changed so much in recent times, and yet it stays true to those ideals of the ancient Greek tragedians. You know, how as a director do you find and emphasize the truth or the heart of the story of this work?
I think with this play, looking at it, all, I mean, we've actually spoken in, particularly in the conversations with the designers about the representation of a chorus or who is the Greek chorus in the work, who's representative of society and society's values and how that is, you know, affecting and or blocking or challenging or manipulating the main character. So that's been really interesting. We're always in a play that deals with social consciousness that stemmed right back from the ancient Greeks and the work that they were doing back in the ancient times. And even still today, this character of Chris Quinn is very much almost an anti-hero, an incredibly flawed person in an unthinkable situation or presented with a real dilemma. And watching him navigate that and making really considerable mistakes and errors in judgment, compromising his morality. We see all of that in this play. And those are the things that you see in those ancient Greek classics. And it's really just about the humanness of it and that these dilemmas never really go away. We've just been trying for the past 1,000 years to figure out the best way to deal with them.
Yeah, and great question. What is the best way to deal with them? So how have you approached staging this challenging work?
I think one of the things that I wanted to do in telling this story is why is it a play and why are people going to come to a theater to see it? And I think it's a play that actually the dialogue is it's almost a memory play in a way, and the dialogue is quite confusing and disorientating because it's from the point of view of that main character who isn't quite sure what's going on around him. So taking a leap off of the text in that way and kind of going, well, what world does it exist in? And I'm not really interested in presenting something that could easily be a TV show or a film on stage. So really extending the text where it gives us that disorientating effect and building a world around that for the character to exist in. So we're using, you know, a lot of projection, sound design, lighting design. The set is very minimal. It's a liminal space. We don't really want to be recreating any particular location. It the place is the psychology of that main character presented in a theatrical way, and we really, the design team and I, really wanted to create a theatrical space as opposed to creating a literal space that might be really familiar to a lot of audience members, that they would have had these conversations in, or they would have seen people in similar relationships inhabit. We didn't want to represent those places literally. We wanted to be in the mind of that main character and exploring the dilemma that he's facing.
Yeah, and we're talking about the design. So how did the design, the set, the costume, the lighting, the sound come about? What was your process of developing this cool idea?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It started with all the designers and I just having separate chats, and then we had a chat all together about what we wanted to achieve. And initially, I think the design was quite substantial. There was a lot happening. We kind of put all of our big ideas into the mixing pot and really then just simmered it down. And it went down and down and down further until we just have the basic elements that we need to tell this story. And I mean, it even is still distilling itself in the rehearsal process as, you know, we start with props and then we're like, actually, what if there wasn't that? And even to the point that we staged a scene yesterday where there's meant to be four people at a table, but we have two of them not sitting because we weren't bringing in more chairs, just so we didn't feel the need to provide everything that's dictated in the text, because we're not in a literal space. We're in the space of this guy's mind, and we don't need to kind of be beholden to all the literal references in the script. And I think that actually creates a world that is untrustworthy and is inconsistent, and that very much is what's happening in the play.
Fabulous. Sound design is a really tricky production role to apply appropriately, and you've talked about this being a little bit like a memory play, and I wonder if you could give a brief a definition of that, maybe for our listeners who aren't familiar with it, how has sound design helped to enrich in that style, or to enhance the work?
When I talk about the play as a memory play, we have the character kind of sitting outside the timeline of the work. So the scenes in the play are almost happening as memories or recollections of the main character. I think when people come and see the play, it'll be very clear to them through costume design that the main character is not sharing the space with the other actors. He is kind of depositing himself into the scene of his own memory, and he's recalling what happened. So everyone around him will kind of be as they were, as he remembers them in the scene, but he's actually going to be dressed as he is having the memory. So there'll be a real disconnect there. Looking at sound design, the play deals a lot with like technology and social media, message groups, chats, viral videos. When I was speaking to the sound designer, we were talking about like there are instincts when a play exists in the digital realm. There's kind of your go-to instinct of what that world sounds like, and we wanted to kind of go the complete opposite of that. So usually there's like a more techno glitchy droney kind of atmosphere that you're creating, something very digital sounding, but we wanted to go something that was a little bit more thriller-esque and had a little bit more of a drive and had a little bit more pressure. So we kind of are playing with the soundscape of drums, different type of percussion. That can be the utilization of drums, the sound of body percussion, but also and breath as well, which is, you know, you pant after you've been chased, or your body has a physiological reaction to fear and things like that. We were like, oh, okay, that's panting, that's a deep breath, that's an inhale. So we talked about all of that. So the play actually has the opposite of a digital soundscape, and it's something that actually is a bit more tribal and organic sounding even.
That sounds incredible. I cannot wait. This is awesome. So we've been talking about this probably throughout this discussion, but in what ways do you see this as a contemporary theatre work, and why do you think it will appeal to Victorian students or teachers?
This play, I was a bit nervous when I decided to do it, to be honest, because the play takes something like sexual assault in this post-Me Too era, middle of Me Too or post Me Too, which however you're going to define that period of time, and puts it in the POV of a man who has to decide what happens to to a relationship. And I think that's really tricky, because we want to be platforming the right voices in this conversation, but also there are some conversations that need to have male participation, and we need to be talking about breaking down this notion of kind of brotherhood and mateship that has toxic traits and that works against the work that we're doing in keeping people safe and being able to hold people to account. So having a play that deals with male relationships and what the fallout of those relationships are in the wake of a sexual assault allegation, I think is a story that we're not quite hearing enough. And I think Katrina, the playwright, also thought this, and that's why she wrote the play. So I think it's going to be really interesting for particularly young men to come and see this play, particularly high school students, and kind of see those male relationships play out and the repercussions of being complicit, being a bystander in a situation involving sexual assault.
Yeah, and obviously I don't know the play particularly well, but the idea of modeling what you could do or what you might do and seeing that play out in front of you. I mean, theatre is such a powerful medium for empathy and understanding and stepping into the shoes of another person. It could be quite profound for those young people watching.
Absolutely. And I think that you're exactly right. This is what theatre is for. Theatre is for us to imagine a reality in which something happens so that we're prepared for it in our lives in a way. Like we're going to invite people into this space to have this really challenging conversation with the safety net of theatre so that they can then go out to the real world feeling maybe a little bit better equipped and a little and have the capacity to articulate better how they feel about this. And I think that's kind of a really great contribution that Katrina, the playwright, has been able to kind of give to us.
Yeah, so you've got this challenging work that we've talked about throughout our discussion today. What have been some of those challenges and how have you overcome them with this work? How are you walking that fine line or are you not? Like, what are you doing? How are you approaching this work?
I think when we were chatting to the cast in our rehearsal process, we've been talking about the fact that we really don't want to be we don't want to be shying away from what this play is and the words that are being spoken by the characters in this play. So we want to honor the text in its fullest form and at its most intense, because that's when the play is going to work the best. Having said that, in order to do that, we need to ensure that the rehearsal room is safe and that people feel that they can have these nuanced conversations and also be able to share stories about their own lived experiences relating to this subject matter. So I think one of the things that we've acknowledged is that even if you feel like you can share your story and that's comfortable for you, you don't quite know where everyone else is at, and they might not be in a position to hear that story right now, even if it is in the context of talking about the play. So we've, as an extension of the work, have brought in consent processes and frameworks into our rehearsal space around disclosing, personal stories, or even talking about more graphic content and subject matter in this space that we're all sharing together, because I think it's important that everyone's coming to work and feeling good about it. Even though the show is very intense, we need those safety mechanisms in place. And additionally, we're rehearsing in a shared space. There are other people coming into this building that might overhear some of the conversations and dialogue, and they've not really consented to being a part of that conversation. So we need to be conscious of, who's in earshot, who's able to hear what. And is it the most appropriate time to be talking about these things at any given moment? So we're being really conscious of that.
Well, that deliberate consideration, I think, is going to be really powerful. Well done for leading in that space. Excellent. And I think another reason why we gave that warning at the start of the episode to let people know that this is going to be talked about. So thank you. That's fabulous to hear your processes around that this challenging material.
Thank you.
So how have you approached casting this show? This would be tricky as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually cast the play a little bit differently than it was originally done on the first production in Ireland. And in the play, there's a whole bunch of male characters, and then there are four female characters. One of the characters is Chris Quinn's sister, Sarah, and that's played by one actress. And then there's five women. The other four women are played by one actress. So Jane, Orla, Marie, and Kate are all played by one actress, because a part of the disorientating, confusing effect of the narrative on Chris is that he keeps seeing this same person, but they're all different people. And that's a really interesting theatrical concept, and I really did like that. However, I was conscious that if I was to cast the play in the way that they did in the original production, we wouldn't have gender parity in the room to have those conversations. So what I wanted to do was realign some of the roles so that those four roles that are usually played by one person will be split between two actresses, and that we would have three women in the cast and three men, as opposed to an uneven number. And that's been really beneficial because there's been solidarity amongst those performers in sharing their stories as well. And it's created a really great environment for them to give their varied perspectives on the content of the play and the scenes within the play. And in terms of then how I solve the confusion that Chris feels by seeing the same person over and over again, we've decided to go with the fact that he's in a psychological space where he doesn't trust what he's seeing. So we as an audience don't need to be confused in that way. So things like costume design, vision, projection, all those things, they're going to help tell the audience that Chris is confused in what he's seeing. And I felt it was more important to use technical design aspects to deliver that confusion of that character instead of casting, because for me, my priority in casting it was to have gender parity in the room to have these conversations.
Thank you for explaining that. That's really interesting. Thank you so much. This show sounds fabulous. Thank you for painting such a vivid picture of the work you're doing and then how you're crafting it. It's been fascinating listening to you talk about it. How on earth do we get tickets to this show?
You can get tickets by going to theatreworks.org.au, and the season runs from the 3rd of April to the 13th of April.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so very much. We can't wait to come. I look forward to
Thank
seeing
you.
the show. Thank you for your
Thank you.
time today, Timothy Wynn.
Thank you.
Well, that is all from us at The Aside. Huge thanks to Timothy Wynn for coming to talk to us about Duck Duck Goose. You can, of course, find links to get tickets in the episode description, so please do click those. It really sounds like a fabulous show. Thanks to Timothy Wynn for giving us his time today. That may be all for this episode of The Aside, but there are over 400 other episodes that you can listen to, so feel free to go through our bank of episodes to find one that piques your interest. If you would like to ask us a question or you would like to suggest an episode for the future, feel free to do so by emailing us at asidepodcast@outlook.com. You can also find us on Facebook. Huge thanks to Drama Victoria for their ongoing support, to Halebury for letting us record here, to Aaron Searle for providing the music, and of course, thank you for listening.